content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Kogal from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Glamour and Vogue magazines. Well, welcome back, everyone. Today is Thursday, July 18th, middle of the summer. Hope you've been having a good one. And, well, let's get started. I've got a couple of really good magazine articles. So we are going to get started right away. And our first article comes from Glamour. And as you know, everything is online now, so it's glamour.com. No actual hard copies anymore. We still get Vogue, and I'll be reading something from that later, but anyway. This is from glamour.com. Nora O'Donnell has a new job. She's been preparing for it since age 10. A few hours before our interview, Nora O'Donnell decides to sleep in until 6 a.m. This is new for her, the notion that she might be able to wake up around the same time as the rest of us, and she hasn't quite adjusted. For the better part of a decade, O'Donnell co-hosted CBS This Morning and rose at what is, for most people, the middle of the night. Next week, she shifts gears and schedules. O'Donnell is about to take her seat in the anchor chair at CBS Evening News, making her the second woman ever to solo anchor the broadcast. Katie Couric held the position from 2006 to 2011. Connie Chung co-anchored the program with Dan Rather from 1993 to 1995. Her move comes at a time when trust in the news is at an all-time low, and thanks to mobile alerts, social media, and a host of other distractions, there have never been more opportunities to avoid what was once appointment television for most American families. Even so, the three major news broadcasts still command upwards of 20 million viewers a night. In both respects, O'Donnell has her work cut out for her, and she knows it. The evening broadcast has to change, she insists. We are now living in a time when we already get the headlines on our phone. So how do we provide context and depth? By 6:30 p.m. at night, we know what happened, she says. How can we explain why it happened? I think people are hungry for and craving a trusted source of unbiased, fact-based news. And that is our standard. And that's, quite frankly, the brand of CBS already. Still, O'Donnell's ascent is at once evidence of a new era at the network, which has started to recover from the exits of Charlie Rose, Leslie Moonves, and 60 Minutes executive producer Jeff Fager, who all stepped down amid sexual misconduct and gender discrimination claims, and an obvious next step. She has covered Congress, six presidential campaigns, and the White House. She's interviewed half a dozen presidents and has stared down hurricanes, a red-faced Bill O'Reilly, and other natural disasters on live television. So, of course, it's nice that a woman got the job this go-around. But as usual, it's also about time. Ahead of her first night in the same seat that famed anchor Walter Cronkite once occupied, O'Donnell spoke to Glamour about her ambitions for the show, how she found her voice in journalism, and what a person does when she misses a call from Oprah. Glamour, I've heard your first anchor gig came at age 10. Is that true? And if so, I want to hear all about it. O'Donnell, right, as a child in Seoul, in South Korea, is the picture that is here. She says, "That's true. My first anchor job was when I was 10 years old in Seoul, South Korea. My father was a colonel in the U.S. Army, and we were deployed to Seoul. We lived on the Yongsung Army base for 2 years. It's a tight-knit community, and a friend of my mother's said, 'Hey, I know about this opportunity,' because children in South Korea were required to learn English at a young age, and they were looking for people to make audio tapes and to do an English program on a station that was sort of the equivalent to a PBS. That became my first job, essentially anchoring an English learning program once a week on Korean television. I got a small paycheck every week, and I'd go get Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie tapes. And that was the beginning. I'll never forget it. Penny Lover by Lionel Richie was my favorite song. I think a lot of people, and women in particular, remember what it feels like to get paid for the first time. Was that part of it memorable, earning a check?" And Nora O'Donnell answers, "It was my first job, and I grew up in a military family. We were four kids, and my parents didn't give me money to go buy whatever I wanted. If I wanted something, I had to have a job. So work was important to me because it gave me independence. From age 10 on, I've had a job." Were news and journalism important to your parents? Because we lived overseas, we always paid attention to the news in my house. We always read the newspaper. My father was a doctor, so we always had medical journals lying around. Also, Time and Newsweek. We always watched the news at night, and I think, really, because of my parents' reverence and respect for journalism, that exposed me to the world, to that world. The first and most powerful woman I saw on television was Barbara Walters. I didn't realize this until recently, but a friend of mine in Texas, her mom said, "You always used to imitate Barbara Walters. You would call up on the phone and leave messages and say you were Barbara Walters and that you wanted an interview. You've spent the bulk of your career as a reporter covering a host of presidential elections. Then you jumped to CBS This Morning. You've talked before about how that helped you find a voice of your own on television. What was that process like? What did it feel like as a journalist to exercise that muscle?" Nora O'Donnell, "I think the hallmark of great journalism is listening. But certainly, in the past decade, what I've realized is the power of my own voice and the power to choose the type of stories that we do and the power to use my voice to seek the truth, to hold powerful people accountable. I don't think I really realized the power of my own voice until I spent all those mornings anchoring CBS This Morning and talking to such a range of not just world leaders and politicians, but artists and authors and businesswomen. I think I learned a lot from that experience." That consciousness feels very much in line with this new era at CBS News, with women in senior positions, from CBS News President Susan Zirinsky on down, and with women like Gail King and Margaret Brennan and you in the anchor chairs. When I think back on the hashtag MeToo upheaval in media and entertainment, which obviously affected CBS, one big topic of conversation was who gets to decide which stories are told. With this new job, how much are you thinking about the balance of stories and diversity of those stories on CBS Evening News? Nora O'Donnell's response: "Part of my role as the anchor of CBS News is also managing editor, and I take that role very seriously. That's an editorial focus. The types of stories we cover and the types of people that make up our stories on the air. And this is A New Era at CBS News, led by Susan Zirinsky. And part of that new era includes a new culture. It's a culture of inclusion. It's a culture of diversity. And that's not only in our workplace, but in the types of stories that we tell. The narrative does matter. What strikes me now is that the types of stories we tell and we choose to put in a 30-minute broadcast should also be reflective of America. So I'm looking very closely at that, and I intend to use that voice and that perspective that I've developed to guide that. Glamour. In your conversations with Susan and with some of the other people at the network, has there ever been a freeze frame moment like, I can't believe we're the people who are having these conversations? I think a lot of women haven't been able to imagine that when they're at the peak of their career, if they get there, it'll be possible for them to sit in a room with 3 or 5 other women who are empowered too. So, Nora O'Donnell's response. Oh my gosh, I mean, never in my wildest dreams did I think that I was going to be the anchor of the CBS Evening News. And at that same time, as our first female president of CBS News. You know, never ever. But we are in the midst of this transformative time. I've been talking for a while about the 21st century being a century of women. And over the years, it was really a sense of optimism and hope that led me to say that. But now I feel like I'm at the center of this moment, this change, and it's happening at CBS. And it's not only Susan Zirinsky, it's also Executive Vice President of the News, Kim Godwin, and Executive Vice President of Strategic Professional Development, Ingrid Cyprian Matthews, both of whom are women of color. And across all the networks, women anchor all the morning broadcast shows. CBS This Morning, The Today Show, Good Morning America. It is an incredible time. And I think we've been waiting for that. I said it 18 months ago, and I still feel it. Women cannot achieve equality in the workplace until there is a reckoning and a taking of responsibility. I really do feel hopeful that we are getting closer to that and to getting to that dream of equality. Glamour. It's very exciting, but the work isn't done. Nora, write and look. There are still great challenges out there. I mean, look at the U.S. women's soccer team. We did that story for 60 Minutes 3 years ago about their first complaint with the EEOC. It didn't go anywhere, but they kept pushing, and they keep fighting. They never quit. Glamour. And they keep winning. Nora. And they keep winning. Glamour. When news broke of your appointment to this position, it should have been this historic, incredible announcement. And it was. But there was also this background noise that felt so regressive. This narrative came out and pitted you against Gayle King, who has been a close coworker of yours for years. Was that hard to tune out? How did you process both your total joy over the huge development and also the awareness that these kinds of stories are going to be written about women who are doing well? Nora, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Luckily, I have some perspective on it now. Probably the best advice that I got was from Oprah at the time. You know, she called me a couple of times and I didn't recognize the phone number, and so I thought, it's just a reporter that I don't want to talk to. Then I checked my voicemail, and the message was like, Nora, it's Oprah. Call me back. I'm like, oh my God. So when I did call her, Oprah said, in the midst of all this, you will not rise without challenge. You will have the last word. And this job is your supreme destiny. She was talking to me, and I was scribbling so quickly to write down everything she said. I have notes from that conversation. She reminded me about the importance and power of perspective. The truth is, whenever someone is in a position of power, male or female, that person will have critics. But it's not the critic who counts. It's the person in the arena. But that was a new experience for me. And I know now that it's okay to acknowledge that that exists. But also, you can't allow it to distract from your own record and reputation. Glamour. That is wonderful advice. But isn't it also even better because it came from Oprah? Nora. Oh, exactly. Glamour. It would be good if your husband said that to you, but Nora, I know. If I had been feeling any anxiety, it was quickly alleviated by Oprah, which again is a reminder. Surround yourself with a support team and people who know who you are and care about you. For me, one of the great lessons is you really can't do any of these hard jobs alone. Glamour, what will success look like for you, let's say 12 months from now? Nora, I really want us to be the most trusted broadcast in America. I mean that. We are bombarded by information, whether it's alerts on our phones or cable news. Where's the one place that you can sit down, kick off your sneakers or your heels, and say, I'm going to get the truth now for 30 minutes. Truth is under attack. Civility is under attack. Journalism is under attack. And I think we can fix that. We can fix that by restoring trust in the product. Success looks like a top quality broadcast. Maddie Kahn is a senior editor at Glamour. Follow her at Maddie Kahn. All right, well, our next story brings some difficult topics to light. What Sweet Bitter gets right and wrong about toxic restaurant culture. The show's season 2 gives a deeper look into the harsh, often dangerous restaurant industry. But these real-life servers and bartenders think the show could push even further. Here's why. And this is by Elizabeth Sherman for Glamour.com. July 15, 2019. In Sweet Bitter's two-part season 2 premiere, which aired last night, restaurant manager Howard, Paul Sparks, gives a startling declaration to Jake, Tom Sturridge, a bartender infamous for his liaisons with female co-workers. The employee handbook is being changed so that all staff members must disclose romantic relationships with co-workers. This sudden push to create a, quote, safe and professional work environment, end quote, is hypocritical for Howard. Last season, his disastrous affair with the restaurant's young hostess came to a disturbing conclusion in the middle of a busy dinner service. But it's another way Sweet Bitter continues to navigate the murky, often inappropriate relationships that can take place among restaurant staff. Despite its distinct soap opera quality, the series has never been shy about taking jabs at the hazards of the service industry. Howard's predatory and patronizing attitude toward our protagonist, Tess, now a newly promoted waitress, And the messy on-again, off-again relationship between her and Jake are constant sources of conflict. In both situations, the men hold the power. Binge drinking and drug use are also widespread among the employees, and long hours working in close quarters lead to unhealthy codependent relationships. The takeaway? A vulnerable woman trying to establish herself in a fast-paced kitchen faces peril at every turn. This season, the show is doubling down on the message that restaurants can be dangerous places for women and immigrants and people of color to work. In the wake of ongoing allegations that abuse and assault plague the hidden rooms of restaurants, Howard's change of heart stands out, one that would be conspicuously missing if it wasn't addressed at all. To be clear, Tess is not a victim. In the early days of season one, she was naive. Now she recognizes what makes her job treacherous and still fully embraces restaurant work. In season two's first episodes, Tess seems determined to embark on a one-woman mission to improve her co-workers' lives by enforcing her own policies of support and communication. She helps a beleaguered coworker and urges him to take more breaks. She de-escalates an argument between a server and dishwasher over a part of lost, possible stolen sneakers. It sets up the show to interrogate what causes toxic restaurant culture and what it might take to change it. I was talked down to, spit at, shamed, and made to feel less than, for no other reason than my job. It's an admirable mission, but some women who have worked as servers themselves feel the show doesn't grasp the full scope of harassment that can exist in restaurants, or that it's equipped to handle sensitive topics like sexual harassment in a truly nuanced way. I think Sweet Bitter can't tell the difference between making a joke about how a piece of ginger looks phallic and blatant racism and sexual harassment, says Sophie, 29. She has worked as a barista, waitress, and bartender over the years and has, along with other women interviewed here, watched the first season of the show. In the real world, Sophie says, she experienced harassment with disturbing frequency. She remembers seeing a chef snap the exposed thong of a server who had bent over to pick something up. In another incident, Sophie says she went to her boss, a restaurateur who encouraged staff to report harassment, in tears over the harassing texts a male coworker had sent after they got in an argument at work. The coworker was disciplined, and the texts stopped. To Sophie, the most demoralizing aspect of restaurant work is actually mistreatment from customers, an issue which Sweet Bitter addresses more directly in season two. One memory still makes her shudder. While working as a cocktail waitress, a customer commented that her bra fit really well. She felt she couldn't tell him off without risking her job. Sweet Bitter focuses on sexual tension and partying, but it doesn't really show how draining and demeaning it can be to work in the industry, Sophie says. Being treated like you're second class or like you're an idiot by customers gets exhausting. Lily, 29, has worked in food service for over a decade. She says one of her biggest challenges has been watching women, herself included, get overlooked for raises and promotions, while male colleagues confidently sought out and were awarded these accolades. And like Sophie, she's dealt with abusive customers. The after-hours debauchery, drinking, taking drugs, and self-destruction, all of that resonated hard. I was talked down to, spit at, shamed, and made feel less than for no other reason than my job. Classism is alive and well, she explains. Tess is an earnest 20-something who always looks adorable. That was not my reality. I felt disgusting and mortified constantly. Sweet Bitter does get a lot right, though. I thought the way Tess was objectified seemed pretty accurate, Lily says. She's young and therefore immediately the target of aggressive flirtations. She's also constantly navigating unwritten rules. I do think the show captures that sense of being brand new and entering a fully formed universe. The scenes in which the staff enjoy free drinks at the bar after the restaurant's closed are also familiar to the women I talk to. Sophie recalls feeling pressured to participate in these nightly rituals to build camaraderie amongst the team. Once she agreed to take shots with a fellow server in the bathroom during dinner service, worried she'd alienate her coworkers if she refused. When they were caught, she nearly lost her job. The after-hours debauchery, drinking, taking drugs, and self-destruction, all of that resonated hard, Lily says. For me, it was exactly as the show suggests, a tilt, a whirl of depression and fast friendships. Tanya, 48, has worked as a waitress, bartender, and hostess for over 30 years. She immediately related to the tight-knit band of servers on Sweet Bitter. As she explains, when she started working in the industry, the environment was even more extreme than what the show depicts. Tanya now works at a restaurant where she says most of the staff is sober and she feels supported by her boss. She's looking forward to seeing how Sweet Bitter handles workplace harassment in season 2, a subject she says haunts me to this day. I know all too well the toll sexual harassment takes on a person, she says. It needs to be addressed, and I don't know of any other show that can do that. Sweet Bitter may not have given viewers a full picture of the consistent harassment many female restaurant employees face, but as one of the few shows committed to exploring the inner workings of the industry, it might be the best hope we have to get there. Elizabeth Sherman is a food and culture writer based in Jersey City, New Jersey, and all the names have been changed. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Annika Gall. You have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleRadioReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Make it a great week, and we'll see you next time. Still the middle of summer. Do something really fun. Make something new, like a dress or shorts, or a new meal, or a new friend. Anyway, we'll see you next time.